following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
I think we'll start today with a sing-along. So, oops, hold on. I need to mute that speaker. Hold on, I need to turn this down so that I can bring this up. All right, you ready to sing? Follow the bouncing ball.
In my administration, I'm going to enforce all laws concerning the protection of classified information.
If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it, because you're sending it to Mar-a-Lago or to wherever you're sending it.
Yeah.
And there doesn't have to be a process. There can be a process, but there doesn't have to be. You're the president. You make that decision.
Uh-huh.
So when you send it, it's declassified. I declassified everything.
Uh-huh.
I am special, oh so special. I have privilege that most will deny. On Truth Social, I'll show everyone how I can lie. It's seditious, against my wishes. Forget national security. Oh my precious, give my documents back to me. See the famous man in that portrait there? How rich do you think he must be? Such an orange face, such a head of hair, such a creepy smile, such a special me. It's beautiful. There's excitement and indictment, legal plans that consist of delays. 'Cause I'm loved by a pretty and wonderful face. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Oh.
Now, I declassify things, and we were having a lot of problems with NARA. You know, NARA is a radical left group of people running that thing.
Yeah.
And when you send documents over there, I would say there's a very good chance that a lot of those documents will never be seen again. There's also a lot of speculation because of what they did, the severity of the FBI coming and raiding Mar-a-Lago. Were they looking for the Hillary Clinton emails that were deleted, but they are around someplace?
Catastrophe.
And a lot of people said the only thing that would give the kind of severity that they showed by actually coming in and raiding with many, many people is the Hillary Clinton deal, the Russia stuff, or, I mean, there are a number of things, the spying on Trump's campaign.
Yeah.
So they spied on my campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Nasty, all outlaster, special master, a top secret disaster concealed. If I have to find a judge to hear my appeals.
Oh, man. That is just too good. Where's my applause? Come on. Hold on. There we go. All right. All right. I thought it's a new week. It's a new month. It's a new Supreme Court term. I thought we should start with a song. And the thing that's so perfect about that is, and that was a Parody Project, our friends at the Parody Project, parodyproject.com. The thing that was so brilliant about that is all the spoken word parts were exact verbatim transcripts of things that the idiot, the orange thing, actually said. Just, you know, it's like, do you remember on Saturday Night Live when Tina Fey was doing Sarah Palin and the script was her exact words? Truth sometimes is stranger than fiction. And truth is typical of an opposite world name for a social media platform that is all about lies. Yeah, so I try not to talk about him much, and I really don't. If you listen to the show a lot, you know that I really don't. But the former guy made a not very veiled threat against the Senate minority leader. You heard about this, right? What he said to what he sent out a tweet. See, Donald Trump doesn't like that Mitch McConnell is actually, you know, doing the Emperor's New Clothes thing, saying he's not wearing any clothes. Nobody else in the Republican Party, except for Liz Cheney, of all people, seems to be willing to do that. But Mitch McConnell is, and Donald Trump, you know, when he gets scared, he lashes out like an injured wild animal, like a rat, you know, like an injured rat would do. So here's the thing. So on his Truth Social, Trump, you know, and they don't call them tweets. They call them truths. And when you repost somebody else's truth, it's a retruth, just in case you were wondering. I got this secondhand. No, I haven't been on his site. I don't do that. Anyway, so here's what the twice impeached, failed former president put down in writing on this Truth Social platform that nobody sees, but inevitably somebody will take a screenshot of it and tweet it out so that you and I unfortunately do see it. And what he tweeted on Friday, and I'll do my best. I haven't done a Trump. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you. I haven't done a good Trump impersonation lately, so I'm a little rusty on it. So bear with me. But what he said, what he wrote was, got to start with a sniff. Is McConnell approving all of these trillions of dollars worth of Democrat-sponsored bills without even the slightest bit of negotiation because he hates Donald J. Trump and he knows I am strongly opposed to them? Or is he doing it because he believes in the fake and highly destructive Green New Deal and is willing to take the country down with him? In any event, either reason is unacceptable. He has a death wish. Oh, wait, a death wish. Oh, I need to turn this up to get the sound effect. A death wish. Must immediately seek help and advise. I think that should have been a C and not an S, but, you know. Advise from his China-loving wife, Coco Chow. Now, if you don't think that that was a racial slur against Elaine Chow, then you're not paying attention. First of all, Coco? Where did Coco come from? Unless there's something I don't... Again, I'm not the foremost expert on Elaine Chow or the McConnell family in any way, shape, or form. So maybe her nickname is Coco. But I don't think so. And Chow? You know, her name is spelled C-H-A-O. And you would think Donald Trump would know that since she was in his cabinet. And one of the few who was there the whole time. She was transportation secretary under the Orange Menace. And now he's bad-mouthing her? Oh, that's right. She quit on January 6th and was one of the people allegedly talking about, 25th Amendmenting him, removing the president because he's mentally deranged. But it's not spelled C-H-O-W like he wrote it in the truth. You see, when I call this what anything he writes a truth, that, my friend, is the exact dictionary definition of opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So it's gaslighting. It's lying about everything every time you open your mouth. It's calling his website of lies truths. That's opposite world. And I see it constantly. One of these days, I'm going to do a full-on, either a whole show or a big segment. I'm compiling a list of these opposite world instances, as it were. So we'll get there one of these days. You know, we got all the time in the world, don't we? So anyway, welcome. Well, you know, this. Anybody else who would say, in the manner he did, talking about the Senate minority leader, somebody his long-running feud with, that he has a death wish in all capital letters. This is a man who has been known to incite violence from his followers, his lemmings, his minions, as it were, and doing it in cryptic fashion, like to the Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. He knew what he was saying. I mean, he's an idiot, but he's not, well, I was going to say, but he's not stupid. You know, a little bit. Anyway, see, sorry, I've been watching, I'm late to the party, but I've been watching Succession on HBO, on HBO Max. And these people get in your head. And, you know, I know it's the Murdoch family that they're supposedly riffing on, but there's some Trump in there too. God, ugh. You know, David won't watch it with me because we started watching it together. And after the first episode, which we tried watching twice, he said, there is not one character on there that's sympathetic or that I even like a little bit. And he just wants nothing to do with it. I find the intrigue kind of disgusting, but it's part of life these days, isn't it? It is. So anyway, so today is October 3rd. It happens to be the first Monday in October, and that means the beginning of the new term of the Supreme Court. And I'm really delighted to read the reports. I didn't get to hear any of the hearing today. So they don't allow cameras in federal courtrooms. That's number one. They're not allowed. And what they've been doing, what they did before the pandemic with the Supreme Court, was they would make audio recordings of the hearings available after the fact. They're posted on the Supreme Court website. Honestly, today I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to look. So I don't know if you're able to listen in to the live arguments anymore, or if you have to wait till afterwards. But somebody did post a clip of Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, you know, engaging. So remember, this was her first day on the court. Just joyous. And the case that they were discussing had to do with the Clean Water Act and whether or not the EPA should have jurisdiction to enforce provisions of it. Here, the first case, Sackett versus the Environmental Protection Agency, the court will take up a long-running challenge that could restrict the agency's enforcement of the Clean Water Act. Now, in historical perspective, you know, some of the justices are very involved, engaged. Some of them, one in particular, at least used to be very quiet. Justice Clarence Thomas, you know, the husband of Ginny, for 10 years before Antonin Scalia's death, when he was on the court with Antonin Scalia, Thomas didn't say a word, not a word, never asked a question, never made a comment, 10 years. Immediately after Scalia died, all of a sudden, Thomas gets quite loquacious. You can't shut him up. Well, none of that problem with Ketanji Brown Jackson, because the first case they hear, she had a lot of questions. Hold on, caller. I'll be with you in a moment.
Isn't the issue what Congress would have intended with respect to adjacency, and there was a regulation that defined adjacency to include neighboring. And as far as I know, Congress used the term adjacency and didn't adjust it to try to make clear the touching requirement that you say was intended by the term.
Yes, Justice Jackson. Every single time that argument has been advanced by the government, it has been rejected by this court.
What?
In Rapanos, the plurality opinion rejected out of hand the idea that 404G represents a ratification of the Corps' broad understanding of adjacency. Justice Kennedy's opinion doesn't even give it consideration. Swank, for its
hold
part,
on, hold
said
on.
404G is unenlightening as to the meaning of waters in the eyes.
All right, well, let me try to bring some enlightenment to it by asking it this way.
Listen to her.
You say the question is which wetlands are covered, which I agree with, but I guess my question is why would Congress draw the coverage line between abutting wetlands and neighboring wetlands when the objective of the statute is to ensure the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters. So are you saying that neighboring wetlands can't impact the quality of navigable waters?
Oh.
Justice Jackson, not at all.
Not at all. And that's where the clip ends. I wanted to hear more. Now, somebody in the chat, Bob LeBlanc in the chat room just said, yes, SCOTUS live on PBS NewsHour YouTube channel. Listen live. Supreme Court hears arguments on whether certain wetlands are protected by the EPA. So that's kind of cool. All right. We do have a guest coming up in a few minutes, but first, the phone rang, so let's get to it. Hi, who's this?
David in North Miami Beach.
Hey, David in North Miami Beach.
Calling since 2004.
Yep, you have been.
So I think he's crossed the stupid streams, our beloved Trump. Calling her Chinese, which is when she's Taiwanese, you know, big family. I'm sure she does business with China. Fine, okay. I used to be a Secretary of Labor, but I think
transportation term, secretary. But okay, yeah. Sorry,
but I mean back in 06.
Oh,
Secretary
okay.
Of Labor.
Oh, gotcha. Anyway. Okay.
Right. I think he's using the put down term Russians call Ukrainians cocos.
Oh, really?
Listening to Russians putting down Ukrainians, I believe that's the term, COCO. So I think Trump, instead of crossing the sexy liberal beams, he's crossed the deeply, deeply stupid beams. And that's how he came up with that nonsense.
Ay, ay, ay.
And Death Wish, I don't think that was even a threat. I'll give him points for, you know, political suicide is the phrase normal people might use, but he's too stupid.
Yeah.
I would have tutored him, but he's too stupid to hire me. So here we are.
Yeah, well,
yeah, so that's the news from Lake Obregon. Thank you.
I gotcha. All right. Thank you, David. Good to hear from you. Bye-bye. Yeah, so there you go. You know, with Trump, it's always something. There's never just an offhand remark because he thinks he's so clever, you know, and, you know, he's not. He is not. There's so many different ways I could go, but let me tell you who we've got coming up in a few minutes, and maybe this will determine. You know, I always come to the show, usually, with a lot of stuff, more stuff than I could ever get through in an hour, you know, in case that, you know, the gremlins take over or the guest just doesn't show up or, you know, I can't get them on the line, whatever. So I have a bunch of stuff today, and I'm not quite sure which way we should go. But, you know, I mentioned this last week, and I want to mention it again before we run out of time, that I think that a Nobel Peace Prize might not be the correct thing, the correct way to honor Chef José Andrés. But, man, do we need to honor him. So this is a guy who is an award-winning chef. He has some of the best restaurants in the world. I mean, Chef Andrés is known for his world, World Central Kitchen is what it's called, WCK. I was trying to figure out what the C was, the World Central Kitchen. And he pops up on all corners of the planet when there's a disaster, when there are people who are hurting, who need to be fed. Right. And so, you know, he could be earning really big bucks just cooking at any of his restaurants, although I guess they can do it without him there on site, while he goes around the world feeding hungry people. So, you know, he was in Cuba last week after Fiona came through, and now he's in Florida. And so I pulled this segment off of CNN because I think it's Jim Sciutto interviewed him today. And I think the world needs to know about Chef Jose Andres. So let's hear him.
We've done more close to 200,000 meals by the end of the day today.
Wow.
Today, probably we will do over 45,000 meals, 50,000 meals today alone.
You look at the pictures of destruction there. It's going to be a long time before people have what they need. How long do you expect to be there? How great do you expect the need to be?
Well, the World Central Kitchen teams, they already said that this is a long-term commitment. Obviously, it's different parts. I've been able to be from day one visiting Fort Myers Beach. The destruction there is the same as we saw in Mexico Beach in a previous hurricane. It's just amazing, the destruction. I've been able to be in Sanibel Island. I've been able to be in Pine Island. Nothing like the destruction I saw, obviously, in Fort Myers Beach. So we're going to be here until the people don't need us anymore. I think the electricity will come back quick and fast because all these companies, they work so well together. I know many parts of Fort Myers, of Florida, will get the electricity again. But again, we are trying to be with those communities. We know because the bridges are destroyed, because the electricity is not going to come back anytime soon. On those communities, World Central Kitchen will be here for the long haul.
Yeah. Again, Chef Jose Andres, and who said that in the chat room? Caroline said, looks to me like he's lost weight since he started being so public. Busy feeding people and not himself so much. What a hero. I hope the weight loss was intentional and that he's okay, because my goodness, we need him around for a long time. And I'm telling you, once I'm hoping, knocking on wood laminate and trying not to jinx anything, but some good things may finally be on the horizon here. And when we get the money to go out to a nice dinner, I'm going to go to we are going to go to his restaurant on Miami Beach while it's still there because it's closing. And yeah, he's a master at new Spanish cuisine, Hernan says in the chat room. And again, he has this restaurant, Bazaar, on South Beach that we can't afford now, but hopefully before they close, we will. But you know, again, I will shine a spotlight on him anytime I can. I did reach out to the World Central Kitchen to try to get somebody to come on to talk about how they do what they do. And so anyway, but obviously they've got more important things to do right now. So we'll see. Well, hopefully. But regardless, worldcentralkitchen.org. Go to their website, and if you can support their work, they're feeding the people that the government isn't, that nobody else is coming to help. And when I say help, you know, the government is who should be helping at times like this. But Marco Rubio did not vote for, you know, the Senate and the House, the Congress, just last week passed the continuing resolution to keep the government up and running, or they would have shut down on Friday, right? So they passed a continuing resolution to go through, I think, December 15th. That also included somewhere in the neighborhood of like $18 to $20 billion for disaster relief. Well, Marco Rubio just didn't show up that day. Go figure. He never shows up. Just saying. And Rick Scott voted against it. So Rick Scott not only voted against the money for disaster relief, he was one of the first people with his hands out this time around. But it's like, okay for me, but not for thee. By the way, at the beginning, I read you Trump's statement on so-called Truth Social with the death threat against Mitch McConnell. So Rick Scott is on TV. They ask him about the death threat. And listen, this is a man who will not state an opinion on anything.
You're a member of the Senate GOP leadership. Are you okay with this?
Well, hey, look, I can never talk about respond to why anybody else says what they said.
The language is what I'm talking about. Isn't that
why?
Dangerous?
I think we all have to figure out How do we start bringing people together and have a common goal to give every American the opportunity to get a great job, their kids to have an education, they believe they can be anything?
You know, he won't answer the question. She asked him, is that okay? And he said, I can't explain why people say what they say. She didn't ask him to explain. She asked him, how do you respond to that? And he doesn't answer. Marco Rubio lies when he was called out for having his hand out here, not being there to cast the vote, and yet voting against relief for Sandy. Here's what Marco Rubio said.
Did other senators vote for relief for your state when you didn't vote for a package to help theirs?
Oh, I've always voted for hurricane and disaster relief. I've even voted for it without pay for it.
No, you did not.
What I didn't vote for in Sandy's because they had included things like a roof for a museum in Washington, D.C., for fisheries in Alaska. It had been loaded up with a bunch of things that had nothing to do with disaster relief. And I wouldn't support disaster relief efforts. I would never put out there that we should go use a disaster relief package for Florida as a way to pay for all kinds of other things people want around the country. So
well,
I think that's the key in moments
Florida.
Like this. And Sandy, unfortunately, they loaded it up. They really did with a bunch of things that had nothing to do with Sandy. But I voted for every disaster relief package, especially that's clean.
No,
and I'll continue to do so.
Didn't.
When it comes to Florida, I'll do that again. And we'll make sure that package is clean and doesn't have stuff for other people in there.
I read the Congressional Research Service report last night. It sounds like that roof actually was damaged by the hurricane. And what happened in Alaska was the result of another disaster. But in any event.
So, you know, again, at least she called him out on it. DeSantis, yes, and I talked about this on Friday. DeSantis had just entered Congress. It was January of 2013. His first vote on January 3rd, their first day in office. And the Sandy relief bill came up for a vote. DeSantis voted no because he's a dick. So this is DeSantis in September talking about, you know, disaster relief and followed immediately by DeSantis now that Joe Biden is saying, yes, we are here. The government is here to help.
Fella that just hates Florida, and his name is Joe Biden.
What?
And he does things like take our medication. He stiffs storm victims of relief just because he doesn't like the governor.
The Biden administration has approved our request for a pre-landfall declaration and did that very quickly. So we're thankful for that. You know, and it's my sense that the administration, you know, wants to help. I think they realize that this is a really significant storm.
That's called talking out of both sides of your mouth. Are people finally seeing who he is? Ron DeSantis is the worst poser of all. He's the worst kind because he's so transparent in his fawningness, in the way he imitates Trump on every front, the way he is nasty to everybody around him, the way he pretends to be above the fray, but he's just horrible. By the way, one other clip I want to play for you because this pisses me off. You know how I talk about the media is derelict in its duty, calling these people out when they lie. The one, and I heard it again, either last night or it was over the weekend or this morning. I don't even remember anymore. But again, one of these, Kevin McCarthy is going around saying the Democrats or the Democrat Party, they want abortion on demand all the way up until the moment of birth. That is just flat out
bullshit.
It is a lie. They're making it up. And you need to hit back every time they say something as ridiculous as that, because there are other people out there who are just idiots who think they're getting their news from Fox when in reality it ain't news at all. It's lies. We need to point out when they are lies. So Katie Turr is on the TV this afternoon, right? And Katie Turr has a reporter on from the New York Times. And he covers, I guess, right-wing extremism at the New York Times. And so this is astounding to me. This is just unbelievable. So the guy's name is Luke Broadwater. And they're talking about Well, I'm just going to play you this clip. You'll hear. Okay, so here's the clip. And it's, well, here you go.
Are lawmakers saying that this is something that they can help try to fix by policing their own language and maybe policing the language of some of the members of their party?
You know, I haven't seen a lot of calls to on the right to
They're talking about the Donald Trump threat to Mitch McConnell. Sorry, I should have prefaced that, what we were talking about a few minutes ago. So this is the segment. That's what they're talking about. Should his fellow Republicans be, you know, calling him out?
Donald Trump for what he said recently about Mitch McConnell. I mean, saying that someone has a death wish, that's pretty obvious language there to some of Donald Trump's most extreme supporters. And we know they do respond to his extreme language, not only around towards politicians, but towards the FBI as well. Of course, on January 6th, some of his most extreme supporters stormed the Capitol building, making threats against the members of Congress. So, you know, I have heard from people close to McConnell that they're very displeased with this, that they think it was very unhelpful. But you haven't seen those voices in the Republican Party come out and condemn this rhetoric.
Okay, here
obviously
we go.
Played the clip of Senator Scott sort of trying to avoid the question. But, you know, in this heightened climate where you do see, and I will say the threats do not just come from the right. You see a fair amount of threats from the left against the Republican members of Congress.
Do you?
And,
that's where Katie Tour should say, really? From who? Please give an example. But here's how it played out.
And, I don't think anybody has helped when you see that type of rhetoric come out from the former president targeting a specific member of Congress.
What?
Makes it more commonplace.
No,
certainly, as
Katie,
we saw,
do your job.
2015, when Donald Trump started running for office. Luke Broadwater. Luke, thank you very much.
When somebody does the false equivalency, both sides do it, you have to do the follow-up question. Really? Who? Please tell me. Who? What Democratic a public official has made a statement along the lines of what Donald Trump did, that Mitch McConnell must have a death wish? What Democratic elected official is making threats like that or inciting their followers to violence? It's not too heavy of a lift for journalists to ask that question. If they're going to do their job, then do it right, Katie Tour. Okay, I said it, and I'm glad. Okay, now for the fun stuff. Our guest is here. You know, it's so funny because, I get these messages. I get, like, Facebook gives me, you know, your memories. But something that Microsoft has started doing, I guess they store my photos in something, and they're saying, here are all your memories, your photos from October 3rd through the years. And one of the photos that came up today is the photo that I used on the cover art of today's show, with a picture of Jason Leopold standing outside of the Camp Justice in Guantanamo Bay. So I used that on the cover of today's show because somehow I got that picture sent. You know, it was in my files from today, some years ago. So Jason, were you in Cuba on this day in history at some point?
I got the same.
Did you?
I got the same memory. Yeah, I was. I was there.
Cool.
And it was 8 years ago.
And is that when I picked you up from your hotel and you came back here and we hung out and we went through my albums and T-shirts and stuff? Yeah.
I think that was the. Was that the canceled trip? Was that the trip when I tried to get there and there was like the? I don't remember if
I
the
don't
flight.
Remember.
Was canceled, but I believe that was the trip.
Yeah, I think so. So we got to hang. We got to spend some quality time.
Your record collection,
yeah, which I don't have anymore, and yeah, my T-shirts too, which I also don't have anymore.
Yeah,
I actually also all those CDs. I got rid of them too.
Ah, kills me, Nicole.
You saw the wall of CDs; those were there.
Oh my God, yeah. They were amazing.
Yeah. So the reason you're here today, I just thought that was how coincidental, because I reached out to you on Friday because I always love it when Jason pops up in my news and like he did it again. The FOIA master did it again. But this time it was something you got something cool that you didn't even ask for.
Yes. And in fact, you're going to have to forgive me as I look down at my phone. I literally just got another document, Nicole.
Really?
That I just quickly put out a story on.
Oh, my. I haven't even seen it yet. Okay.
And excuse me for one second.
That's okay. I'm going to pull you up. Let's see.
So basically what I got was the some records from the National Archives in response to a FOIA request related to Mar-a-Lago. And it's related to some of the records that Trump did not turn over to NARA, the National Archives, that he was supposed to. And this is more or less, these are emails from NARA's attorney confirming what has already been reported, but it kind of adds a little bit more detail. So I'm literally like, you know, just got this this story up, and I'm also looking at an email from my editor. Like, so I apologize.
Oh, that's
for
okay. No, as I'm introducing you, you know, and telling the story, I started to introduce you, and then I went to, and I saw you look down again. I figured you're reading something very intently, something important. Do you need to focus on that for a minute? Well,
yes.
Okay.
While you chat.
You do that. And what I'm going to do is tell them about what you uncovered on Friday. So the news alert comes up, and chances are people should have already seen it by now. But basically, if you've ever wanted to be a fly on the wall in the Oval Office when, say, President Obama was doing an off-the-record interview 3 days before he was getting, when he would leave the Oval Office, this was January 17th of 2020, an off-the-record end-of-term interview with people described as progressive columnists. That alone made me go, whoa. And before I even read it, reaching out to Jason and saying, hey, come on the air, let's talk about this. And he said, let's do it Monday. So here we are. And now, and what we learned too, is that that wasn't a document that Jason had specifically requested. It came with other things that he had put in a FOIA request for that I guess was related. Is that what it is? It was related to something else you had asked for?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the backstory on this. And it's kind of weird. So 5 years ago, five and a half years ago, actually, five and a half long years ago, I filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the Justice Department, asking the Justice Department for all records that they had related to Rex Tillerson and ExxonMobil, right? Okay. Rex Tillerson was Secretary of State.
Yep.
And ExxonMobil, he was chairman and CEO of, or I believe maybe just CEO of.
Right.
And they were investigated for various climate change denial activities. So I wanted some records related to that. Last week, at the end of the FOIA fiscal year, that's an actual thing, Nicole.
The FOIA fiscal year. Okay.
What happens at the end of the FOIA fiscal year is all these government agencies try to reduce their backlog. Okay, their backlog of FOIA requests that have been pending for a very long time, and is a way to kind of pad their stats to show, hey, look at all the records we got out, even though these records have been pending, you know, or these requests have been pending for years.
Right.
I get these records from the Justice Department related to Rex Tillerson, and I start going through it. And it's like, okay, you know, that would have been great if I got that five years ago.
Yeah.
But then I come across this transcript, and it's not redacted. And there's a there's an email attached to it. And the email is from the Executive Office of the President, EOP.gov, forwarded to someone at the Justice Department. Normally, it's not a big deal, but, you know, and it looks like a transcript that you've seen when you get the White House sort of alerts when, you know, someone's doing an interview. So I looked through this and I started reading it and coming across, you know, some phrases, some words, some things that just didn't sound familiar. This was a transcript of an off-the-record discussion that took place on January 17th, 2017, between Barack Obama, who was president, and various progressive columnists.
Right. They're described as progressive columnists, though they never identify who's there, though I was able to pull a few names out of the transcript, but we'll get there. I'm sorry. Keep going.
So, So I start going through this, and there are some remarkable moments here. I mean, and President Obama is just kind of letting loose, right? He's talking about look, you know, 4 years of Trump, it wouldn't be, you know, it's not going to be so bad. You know, we'll bail water, try to fix what's broken. Huh? But 8 years, eight years will be really bad.
Right.
And then he goes into talking about, you know, what the reporter should be focused on. He says his number one concern is the Justice Department, is the politicization of the Justice Department. He would be like white on rice with the Justice Department. So he starts really going into some great detail. Even talks about the fact that Bill Clinton messed up when he got on Loretta Lynch's plane.
Yes.
That Hillary Clinton, you know, screwed up by having a private email server. Yep. James Comey, he was having a bad week and a bad month. And, you know, he's really, really, you know, discussing in a candid ways what he thought happened and what he, you know, was predicting could happen. It was very, in hindsight, when you look at this, when you read these 21 pages through a historical lens,
it's fascinating.
It is really prescient.
Yeah.
And it's truly fascinating. And it's an incredibly important historical document. So I started researching it, and there was nothing ever written about this. Why?
Right. Because it was off the record. Right. Yeah. It is astounding. And as you go through and you read it, again, there were so many things that jumped out at me. One, Jason, is that this was a group of progressive journalists. Now, again, there's no list of who was in the room, though he at one point talks to an EJ, who is obviously EJ Dionne. He talks to Greg, which I'm thinking is Greg Sargent. They mention Rachel's question, so I'm guessing Rachel Maddow was there. But those are the only names I could identify from there. Were you able to tell who else was in the room?
I was not. Mm. And it's funny because it's like I didn't really want to get into the exercise of looking into who was there because
right.
Honestly, I really didn't care.
Right.
You know, I do think that there's something to be said for that's a separate kind of conversation for, you know, you go into a discussion with the president and it's off the record.
Yeah.
It's probably me. I just couldn't do that. It's,
I got you. You know, I got. Well, but, it's me being curious. I wanted to know who was there.
Yeah,
and
no,
so I know
totally
those three true. Names. Right. But the other part is there was always tension between Obama and the progressives because he held himself out as a progressive. Yet he never paid off on those promises. Right.
Yeah. And he goes into some detail about that. But you could tell that there was fear in the room about Trump.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and he was trying to calm those fears. But he was also really, you know, talking to the media about how they should handle Trump and not going after every little comment or insult, you know, or thing that he tweets. He was really, you know, trying to guide, you know, provide some guidance, you know, in what this new world would be. And he had some really pointed remarks about the Republican Party.
He did.
I mean, he said he's like, you just don't know what they stand for. They're incoherent.
Right. I think that's how it ended.
It's really a
basically.
Remarkable transcript.
But, I mean, you know, you also, though, Jason, you said the word prescient, and he was. Let me read this paragraph. He's answering a question, I think, from EJ Dionne. And he says, and if what you see in Europe, illiberalism winning out, the liberal order there being chipped away, and the United States is not there as a bulwark, which I think it will not be, then what you're going to start seeing is, in a G20 or a G7, something like a human rights agenda is just not going to be, it won't even be on the docket. It won't be talked about. And you'll start seeing what the Russians, what the Chinese do in those meetings is that they essentially look out for their own interests. They sit back, they wait to see what kind of consensus we're building globally. They see if sometimes they can make sure their equities are protected, but they don't initiate. He's saying what has happened, isn't it?
Right.
That's exactly what's been going on.
That's what I found fascinating, you know, is how, again, you know, how prescient, you know, this is, but also how important such a, you know, having this to be part of history is. And so when I put this, when we put this story together, it was interesting because this is a record that normally would be off limits, right? If the White House spokesperson working for Obama did not forward this to the Justice Department, it would have been a presidential record. Mm-hmm. It still is a presidential record, but it would never have been responsive to FOIA. There's only one reference in there to Rex Tillerson. So so I felt like this was, after doing the research and realizing this has not been released at all, I felt like this became a really important story. And that's why we kind of also just stuck to the words,
sure,
that, you know, that Obama said, instead of kind of getting into, you know, each and every reporter that was
right,
there.
Right.
Although I am also curious about that, by the way. But, you know, so it's, you know, it's what's interesting is that a nearly six year old document, how timely it feels at the same time because of Trump maybe running again, mm-hmm, but it truly does feel like a incredible history lesson.
Without a doubt. And it gives us other insights. I mean, he even says that he characterized Donald Trump's demeanor towards him as very polite and respectful. He said right. The public him, I'm paraphrasing, yeah, is very different from the private him, which is right. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, he, you know, Obama was really trying to explain to, you know, reporters, journal columnists, whoever they were in there, that, you know, you have a showman and then you have, you know, this guy who's really nice. I mean, I don't think
he's acting nice. He's very, very polite in person.
To him. I don't think he'd have that same feel, or I would wonder if he has that, if Obama feels the same way now.
Oh, probably not.
At that time, you know,
was 2017. Right. And this was after Obama had hosted him in the Oval Office. You know, he sat there. We all saw the tape. It was very awkward and uncomfortable because he didn't belong there. But yeah, it was, I forgot when I, at the beginning, I'm saying, oh, it was January 17th, 2020. No, this was 2016. It was 3 days before Trump was inaugurated. It was a while ago. It's amazing that these are just coming to light. One other thing that stood out is where it started. He was talking about the pardons. Again, this is 3 days before he's leaving the Oval Office, and they're racing to get as many pardons or commutations of sentences done.
Pardons and commutations.
At both. And he was talking about what a long, difficult, in-depth process this is for each of them. And then we hear about how Trump, you know, blanket pardons for everybody.
Right.
Just a different.
Yeah, he was really discussing how careful or thoughtful he was in doing that. And he also went into some interesting detail about Chelsea Manning.
That's right.
Because as the columnist went into this room, this was a 90-minute, just almost a 90-minute discussion that Obama had.
Right.
Right. So as the journalists, columnists, you know, arrive, he's saying that we're just about to announce these commutations and Chelsea Manning is going to be one of them.
Right. And Snowden was another. Right.
Yeah. Well, he goes into what's interesting. Him. He goes into talking about Snowden, not as far as pardoning him, but more about just like kind of like, hey, he gave him a little bit of credit on some of the surveillance, you know, revelations, but he talks about how Chelsea Manning's punishment was unfair, was too long, and Obama said that this was, you know, something that there should have been a punishment, but it was
not that, right?
It shouldn't have been that, and it was again an unguarded moment, you know, I thought that was really interesting. He talks about how he, you know, his frustrations, what he refers to as, you know, the Greenwalds of the world.
I love that. The dig at Glenn Greenwald, who deserves it. But at that time, we didn't know Glenn Greenwald hadn't gone off the deep end yet.
Well, right? Yeah, and I think what he was talking about, I don't know if, you know, what he was specifically referring to as far as the green walls of the world, but what he was saying was, you know, at that time Obama was being criticized for all the drone strikes,
right?
The fact that the CIA, you know, there was no prosecution related to the CIA's torture program,
right?
You know, so those were the things that we were all kind of being, you know, reporting and being critical of at the White House.
Right.
It's very, very different now, nearly, you know, 6 years later. But those kind of, you know, when you just get into the meat of it, those takeaways on, you know, on Trump, and he even talks about, I mean, I found this part. I don't have it in front of me, but if you do, there's a part in there he's talking about, you know, essentially how Trump is, you know, will go around the world, and, you know, his view of foreign policy is neither an isolationist nor an interventionist, just going to go around. He tries to buddy up to, you know, dictators and goes around the world suing people. And he talks about, you know, even if you're, you know, the businesses that he has, or he really, really captured, you know, who Trump is.
Yeah.
No, at that time, really, really kind of nailed it. Even just his view of foreign policy, he says he's not concerned that Trump's going to start any war.
Right.
He's going to, except for the fact that he's talked about wanting to bomb, you know, a bunch of terrorists.
Right.
You know? so it was, and you could tell that the way he was speaking, again, you're reading a transcript, but as you read it, you can hear Obama's voice.
Oh, of course. Right? Absolutely.
So you get the sense of, you know, that this is someone who had just at the time, at least, he was kind of calm. Maybe he was trying to be calm for everyone. Again, things are much different now than the way the public is. But it just in terms of the way he captured him.
Yeah.
I thought he did that. I thought it was really kind of, again,
no, Russian.
Incredible insight.
Very much so. Everybody should read this. It is posted. I will put the link to the Bloomberg News article on my blog where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/10-3-22. Hey, Jason Leopold, David's here. He's got a question for you. Go.
Hey, David.
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
How's it going?
Good, thanks. Hey, I was just wondering, and I realize you can't answer this conclusively, but just speculate for a moment. Do you think that this accidental information that you got accidentally by way of an accident wasn't really that accidental of an accident? That maybe there's somebody who accidentally wanted you to possibly accidentally know what Obama was thinking and saying at that point accidentally?
I mean, that's a good question, but I will say this. The people who deal with the FOIA stuff, no way.
They don't do that.
Here's what they're doing, David. They are typing in a keyword search into, you know, the computer system.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever hits they're getting, they're grabbing everything. Sometimes they'll go through a very careful kind of review. This was one of those instances, because I could just tell, you know, they were just grabbing everything. They don't give that. They didn't give this stuff a very good read. You know,
obviously, right?
This is stuff they kind of like.
So you
moved
think
along.
This got in there because there was one mention of Rex Tillerson in it?
That's it. That was the giveaway. Is that it was a keyword search?
Wow.
You know, they just read it. You know, they read. That's a hit. That's responsive, and that's it. I don't think that there was anything really, you know, anything more than that. Because of, you know, the fact that, you know, the people that are kind of dealing with it behind the scenes, there have been instances where, for example, I'll bring you way, way back to when I forgot what year it was, when Trump fired Preet Bharara.
Yeah, the US right. That was early on. Yeah, that was early on.
Yeah, I filed a FOIA request for records related to kind of the phone calls that took place that led to his firing, you know, because he made some phone calls. He talked about it. I got a response to that FOIA request. I think within a few days.
Really?
They gave me records. And that was, that I knew was when the government, you know, was an instance of the government wanting me to have those records and getting it out.
Gotcha. Versus so it this. Happened immediately. This is 5 years later, 6 years later, and they're just right. closing out the year or their fiscal year.
Right. This is exactly. And that's it. It was, you know, it's 5.5 years later. I mean, you know, if it was the case, I give them a lot of credit for saying, wow, Jason does really read through every document.
Yes.
Because normally this would have been like, oh, it's a transcript. I'll go, you know, you move on. But I'm not even sure, you know, what led me to like completely read this. So
well, I'm glad you did. Well, it's the work you do, Jason. And that's why you're so good at this. You know, yes, this was luck. But again, they sometimes overload you with documents thinking that they're yes. going to bury you and stuff, which is a technique that some lawyers use, right, to overwhelm the other side with too much discovery. Right. Is that kind right. of? But you did.
Yeah. And there wasn't too much here, but it was, you know, the big takeaway. I mean, some people ask me, what was in the Rex Tillerson stuff? It's
nothing.
Nothing noteworthy, you know, nothing that we don't already know. But it, you know, leaving aside like the content of the transcript, this is what makes the, you know, what's great about the Freedom of Information Act is that you get the opportunity to get some gems sometimes
that's
and,
right.
you know, be in the position where you get a set of records from nearly 6 years ago that are not just newsworthy, but are very, very relevant.
Yes, you know? Very relevant and really interesting. I mean, read it. It's 21-page transcript. You can get through it in probably, you know, a half hour to really, you know, watch, listen to what they're saying. Yeah. So, Jason, I got to ask, you're obviously not in your home office today. And
I'm at work, Nicole. When was the last time you saw me at the office?
Never. And I think this is the first time I've seen you in a button-down shirt. You're not wearing a band t-shirt.
Nicole, I I'm worried about this video going up and hurting my cred, Nicole.
Well,
the shirt has a collar. I'm trying to think of like if there's an excuse that I could say. Like why I have this
yeah.
shirt on.
Hey, Jason, this is the picture.
I do have my tattoo showing.
At least that.
You know,
and that's the picture that shows on today's podcast, if you can see it. That's your Black Flag t-shirt in front of the Camp Justice sign. So, but still, I'm a bit, you know, it took some getting used to. It's like, okay, what is unusual about this? Well, that you're not at home. Obviously, you're at Bloomberg. With all the high-tech lights. And then I noticed the shirt. Like, I've never, ever seen you in a button-down shirt. Are you not allowed to wear a t-shirt at the office?
I'm probably allowed. I feel a little uncomfortable today, Nicole.
Well, you look good.
I'm talking a little quietly. I'm in the office. Don't want too many people to hear me. But, like, we're back at work now. We're coming into the office.
Oh.
And so, so I think that me showing up in I don't know, a deep purple t-shirt or some kind of like band t-shirt, I felt like, well, you know, it's different now, Nicole.
I guess. Everything is different now.
Mm. Different.
Okay, off topic question. The National, the archives, the National Archives, some radical left-wing organization? What?
I mean, that is, first of all, the National Archives is exactly, you know, what the name says.
Archives. It's a library, right?
They deal with it. They're like a bunch of, you know, librarians
yes.
there, archivists. And I mean, I've known some of these folks for decades. And I mean, they are really, really into the archival of records.
Right.
There is no, we've never had a discussion that strayed from that. So I think that's kind of hilarious. I mean, I don't even know who would believe such a thing.
Nobody. It's just his demented mind.
But they're also right now at the center, in the center of the story, and they do not like it. They do not know how to handle it. You know, that's it's interesting. Like I said, the story that literally I was breaking right as we started was this, you know, was this email, May 6, 2021 email from the archives head attorney sending an email to the White House attorneys saying that we don't have the correspondence between Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Oh.
We don't have the letter that Obama left for Trump.
Right.
You told us that it would be here. It's supposed to be here. We've learned it was put in a binder. We've learned that there's 24 boxes that you guys have. So this really kind of, you know, again, why I love the FOIA. You can now see a document and at the earliest time when this all went down.
Wow. So, all right, Jason Leopold, we're going to go into overtime here because this is so this is the new story that you just put up, that you just got this information today. It fell in your lap. You were getting an email from your editor because you just went live with the story just as we went on the air. Was there a problem with your story, or did they?
All good. It's out there. I'm just, you know how it is with stories. It's like you put a story out, and then everyone
live, right?
The editor is like, "Did we get this right? Did we do this?" yeah, it's live. I think I'm trying to find it. I have no idea where it is.
Okay, I'm bringing it up now too. Bloomberg. I'm looking. Oh, it wants me to pay. Damn it!
What?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Paywall. That's
paywall
thing for me too.
You got to pay well too. Yeah, I can't get to it. See, this is
I'll send it to you.
Okay, cool. Then I can look at it and I can read it or some of it to the listeners tomorrow. Yeah, see, and look, Bloomberg, I get it. Companies need a paywall. I work without one. I work on donations, but I'm not Bloomberg. You know. But maybe if I had Mike's money, but I don't want to put you in a bad position, so I'll shut up now. there is one last question I wanted to ask you, and it had to do with it was the archives thing. Oh, the Taylor Hawkins concert. Did you go?
I went.
How did I know you'd be there?
I went, Nicole. I wore my Taylor Hawkins t-shirt yesterday that I got from the concert. So it was started at 7 o'clock sharp.
Right.
PM.
Yeah.
It was at
the Forum.
What do they call it? At the Forum, yeah. And it ended at 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
I couldn't stay until 1:30 in the morning just because I was tired. But I stayed for about 4.5 hours.
Wow.
It was incredible. It was an incredible show. You know, I actually really enjoyed seeing Alanis Morissette.
I saw her on video today. Some of the clips are now showing up on YouTube, so I got to see it. Right.
It was great. It was also such so incredibly sad because there was such an eclectic group of musicians, right? And he was so loved by so many.
Yes.
And it just made me very sad that, you know, I don't know if Taylor Hawkins struggled, if this was one of those like relapse moments, whatever it was, but it felt so sad that he left behind so much and that, you know, I don't know, like all of these people knowing and loving him, if they knew that he was, you know, having some problems, if anyone could have helped him. But beyond that, just the performances were incredible. And it was kind of amazing to, you know, to see.
So you weren't there at the end when Taylor's son, Shane, got up and played My Hero. He actually, you know, because there was the concert a few weeks ago in London that I watched, that was televised. That was brilliant. Yeah. Well, this time he did My Hero and then they went into another song. Let me tell you something. This kid can play. Holy shit. He's got his dad's chops. He's in it.
Yeah, I did also see what, how he performed at Wembley.
At Wembley. Yeah.
And it was incredible. I mean, that's what made me so sad.
I know.
He's so young still.
Well, you know, the keyboard player, Rami Jaffe, is a good friend of mine. I met him.
No kidding.
He used to be in the Wallflowers. He was the Wallflowers keyboard player and a session musician who played with everybody. I know Rami from my days in radio out there. In fact, as KSCA was going off the air, he came in one night and did a whole guest DJ thing. He's an old friend going back 25 years. So when he joined the Foo Fighters, you know, he just came on as like a side keyboard player. And right around that time, and this has got to be 15 years ago already, they came to Miami and he gave me a pair of tickets. And I went to, I took some guy from the radio station just to have somebody to go with. And we went, but now Rami is a full-fledged Foo Fighter. So, so I have not spoken to him, though, since Taylor died. You know, they all went dark for a while. And I sent him an email, but now that these shows are over, I'll reach out to him again.
Yeah. Because it was pretty amazing. Very sad. So
it's very sad. And that we haven't heard a cause of death. I'm guessing it was something that
they
don't
did
want to talk
say
about.
It was, he had some drugs in his
they
system.
They said he had drugs in his system, but they didn't say that's what caused his death.
It
is sad, but just a testament to him that, as you said, artists. I mean, and some like Queen reunites. For him, right? James Gang reunites. It twice. They did it in London and here.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously. And the Alanis Morissette connection, for those who don't know, she gave him his first shot. He was the drummer on Jagged Little Pill in that first tour that was such a monster. So I was glad to see her there because she wasn't in London. And I was hoping there was no bad blood or anything.
Yeah, it was nice to see her.
Yeah. Well, I figured you'd be there. This is when I miss LA so much with things like this. I would have been there. But hopefully they're going to do it. So like I said, there are some clips. If you want to see these songs, they're now showing up on YouTube. You can check out Shane Hawkins on My Hero and the other song. It was a song I didn't know, but a very heavy drum song. And he's only 16. And I'm guessing if he was older, they'd probably offer him the job. But because he's only 16, they probably won't because he's really too young to be with one of the biggest rock bands in the world, which they are right now. Right?
I think they are one of the biggest. Yeah,
I think so. See, this is one of the reasons I love talking to Jason, because we can talk news and politics and then we go into music mode.
Would much rather keep talking about music. I need to go pick up my son from the bus stop.
Oh, go. Okay, I need to go too. Thank you, Jason. You are the best. I will post and
share. You are as well, Nicole. And I will talk to you soon.
Definitely.
Take care.
You too. Thank you, Jace. Bye. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Jason Leopold, everybody. He is the FOIA master. You see, they call him FOIA terrorist. Sorry. Jason Leopold is not a terrorist. He is the master. Anyway. The London show was not only on PBS, it was on MTV, on YouTube, and Nicole, I should have him on a Friday. Oh, I should have Rami or Jason. You know, Rami came on when I did that show back in February. I did a very special 25th anniversary show when that radio station went off the air, and Rami called in. He was on with us for a good, probably an hour of the whole thing. So, but you can hear it. Maybe I'll post the Rami Jaffe guest DJ portion of it. I am uploading all kinds of audio from that radio station. I'll definitely put up Rami's thing. All right, with that, we are done. Tomorrow on the show, actually, we'll be talking with a woman named Kate Cohen, who is a columnist for The Washington Post, who had a column last week titled something along the lines of "Get Your God Out of My Pregnancy" or something like that. She writes better than I remember headlines. Anyway, I'm looking forward to talking with her. We've got news. We'll go through whatever happens. And, you know, the week goes on. All right. With that, we're done. I'll leave you with the news. You can look at Jason at Camp Justice, those of you watching video. And I will leave you with the news and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you, Jason Leopold. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it to the first Monday in October, so the Supreme Court begins its new term. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson has been seated, so the court, for the first time ever, has four women, one of them black, but it's still a 6-3 right-wing majority. And the term begins with the Supreme Court's public approval at historic lows. On the docket are cases involving affirmative action, voting rights, LGBTQ discrimination, and challenges to the Clean Water Act. In the court's last term, the conservative majority expanded gun rights and overturned Roe v. Wade, the decision that had protected a woman's right to abortion for half a century. Today, the first case they'll hear to begin the term is Sackett versus EPA, the court taking up a long-running challenge that could restrict the agency's enforcement of the Clean Water Act. And tomorrow, it's voting rights as the court considers whether the Voting Rights Act requires Alabama to create a second congressional district favorable to a black candidate. And away we go. President Biden and Dr. Jill Biden today visit Puerto Rico, where more than 100,000 customers are still without power. This is 2 weeks after Hurricane Fiona hit the island, 5 years to the day after Maria destroyed everything. Yeah, how quickly we forget about Puerto Rico. It was devastated just 2 weeks ago by Fiona, so it'll be a 1-2 Biden punch as he goes to survey both hurricane-ravaged areas. So in Puerto Rico, President Biden will announce more than $60 million in funding through the bipartisan infrastructure law to shore up levees, strengthen flood walls, and create a new flood warning system to help Puerto Rico become better prepared for future storms. Maybe we could make Puerto Rico a state. That's just a thought. And on Wednesday, the Bidens will head to Florida to survey damage from Hurricane Ian. Speaking of Florida, the two senators, both Republicans, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, both asked for funding, quote, to provide much needed assistance to Florida after Hurricane Ian caused death and widespread destruction. But just the day before, Scott and Rubio refused to vote for a bill granting such additional funding. Yeah, the continuing resolution that kept the government funded included a good big first chunk of money for disaster relief. Rick Scott voted against it. He was one of 25 Senate Republicans who voted against the legislation. And Marco Rubio just didn't show up for the vote. What else is new? Hurricane Ian has killed at least 76 people in Florida since it made landfall last week as a Category 4 storm. Four others died in storm-related incidents in North Carolina as the storm continued up there. And there were also deaths in Cuba from the storm. More than 1,600 people have been rescued from the storm's path in parts of southwest and central Florida. And now, with the sun shining, is the daunting task of rebuilding, if they should rebuild at all. The communities left behind are unrecognizable, many of them still without power or clean drinking water. Stay tuned. Well, the British people have been having buyer's remorse about their new prime minister. And now, overnight, the government has dropped Prime Minister Liz Truss's controversial plan to cut the country's highest income tax rate. She had proposed slashing taxes on high earners just 10 days ago, saying it would stimulate growth. But the plan sparked a growing rebellion in her conservative party and also rattled global financial markets. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Sunday that his country's forces have driven out the last Russian troops from the city of Lyman in Donetsk. That's one of the four provinces that Moscow moved to illegally annex last week. But in a brief address to Ukrainians, Zelensky said Lyman is cleared completely. Burned out Russian tanks and armored vehicles line the roads leading into the city. Both sides reportedly suffered heavy casualties in the fight. But this is Ukraine reclaiming Russian-occupied areas. Ukraine has also made gains in the south, where its forces are slowly advancing toward the strategically important city of Kherson. So that's good news out of Ukraine. But there are also horrific reports coming out. As American military veterans who had been captured by the Russians told the Washington Post that they endured horrible interrogations between their June 9th capture and their release from Russian custody in mid-September. The men said they were beaten, deprived of sleep, and repeatedly asked if they were in the CIA. Brazil's polarizing presidential race is now going to an October 30th second round runoff between the far-right incumbent Jair Bolsonaro and challenger Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, a left-wing former president. Da Silva, better known as Lula, led with 48.4% to Bolsonaro's 43.2%, but a candidate must get more than 50% to win outright. Bolsonaro, for obvious reasons, often referred to as the Trump of the tropics, did significantly better than polls had predicted. Oh, and he's also threatened not to accept the results if Lula won, because of course he did. Here at home, the twice impeached failed former president is again inciting violence among his sycophantic followers. Banned from Twitter and other social media outlets, the former guy is now posting on his own platform, the Orwellian name Truth Social, where on Friday he went after Senate Minority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell with a veiled death threat. I'm not kidding. Oh, and for good measure, lobbed a racist attack on McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, who was Trump's transportation secretary. Okay, we knew he was deranged, but this is a whole different level. Even the Wall Street Journal editorial page was scathing in what they wrote about that statement. The editorial ending with, quote, 5 weeks from Election Day, Mr. Trump could be working and spending money to elect a Republican Congress or to help his home state of Florida recover from Hurricane Ian. Instead, he's attacking Mr. McConnell and his wife as part of a personal political vendetta and putting every Republican candidate on the spot to respond to questions about the Trump rant. Mr. Trump always puts himself first, and with this rhetoric, he may put others at genuine risk of harm. That is the Wall Street Journal. Just saying. Oh, by the way, the National Archives informed Congress on Friday that members of the Trump White House still had not turned over all presidential records, and they signaled there could be legal consequences for those who do not comply. In a letter sent to the House Oversight Committee, Deborah Steidel-Wall, the acting U.S. archivist, said the archives was working to retrieve electronic messages from certain unnamed White House officials who had used personal email and messaging accounts to conduct official business. Yeah, I'm just going to leave that to marinate here for a moment while you remember her emails. And finally, down here in South Florida, Congressman Ted Deutch resigned from Congress on Friday. His term doesn't end for another 3 months. We already knew he was not running for re-election to accept a new position outside of politics. But he left on Friday saying, quote, "This job is not easy. We all know there is plenty of progress yet to be made, that seemingly more often we find areas of common ground. We get caught up in bitter, often vitriolic partisanship. We fight, we demonize, we create barriers to some of the change our constituents rightfully demand. The trail of stymied progress is infuriating." No, Congressman, what's infuriating is a congressman who decides to leave with 3 months left in his term, leaving his district and the state at a severe disadvantage, while the Democratic margin over Republicans in the House is now whittled away to virtually nothing. It's irresponsible, and it's a giant F you to your constituents, speaking as one of those said constituents. Unbelievable. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.